At Subway, start 2010 right with surprisingly low-fat choices. The Piled High Subway Club or Turkey Melt, fresh toasted under bubbly cheese. Both are part of a Subway Fresh Fit meal, a simple way to enjoy eating better. Subway, eat fresh. The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Yeah. Round 3 of the Mega NFL Playoff Podcast. As always, leading off for us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, a chagrined and somewhat sad Cousin Sal. What's happened?
Yeah, what's happened, Bill?
Well,
I was hoping we'd get eliminated the same week, so we wouldn't have to go through to start off in misery.
With the post-mortem?
Yeah.
All right, well, walk us through. So you're at Jimmy's house yesterday. Did you leave second half, halftime?
I left in the third quarter. I was like, you know what, I'm not going to stick around. I've been getting on your case for a while for watching the games by yourself, but the bigger games. But it really is true. It's like everyone starts to bug you, you know. You're a Cowboys fan. Like, anyone rooting against you, obviously, is going to bug you. Anyone being nice, rooting for you, annoys you with, you know, stupid questions. And even Cowboys fans start to annoy you. So it's like you really just have to run away and root for the team yourself.
Yeah.
And then you have to deal with Wade Phillips. I don't know. We lost because their pass rush was awesome. There's no question about it. But I do think it could have been a different game if on 4th and 1 at the 31, you go for it instead of marching out this kicker who has been cut this year, missed a 23-yarder against the Saints earlier in, like, the loudest stadium in the league. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. It's all momentum to me, and that killed us. I knew we were in trouble then. I really did.
I thought it was a field position game or headed that way, and they gave up the field position with the missed field goal. I even would have done the Romo pooch punt. Anything.
Yeah.
But you don't. The odds of him making that were 1 in 5.
Oh, I was screaming, and I know a lot of people yell about second guessing, but I swear I was screaming when Sweetsham came on the field.
Come on,
it didn't make any sense to me. You got 3 solid running backs. Come on, Jason Garrett, figure it out. 4th and 1, anything would have worked better there. It's just like, you know, and I know Phillips will probably be back because it's true the defense plays hard for him, and that's important, but his game, Matt, what do you have to make, like 3 or 4 big decisions a game, maybe less sometimes? He'll whiff on almost all of them all the time. I have no confidence in that guy.
How much of it was home field advantage, and how much of it was the fact that everybody we know bet on the Cowboys?
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, I say it was the pass rush of the Vikings, but it was the pass rush and the stupid casual better who every one of them took the Cowboys. They had line, so as soon as that line stayed at 2.5 all week, I said, this is a bad sign.
Second week in a row, because the first week was Cardinals-Packers.
Yeah.
And, you know, I went into the playoffs thinking we were going to have these new rules that were kind of unfolding. And meanwhile, we went back to the old rules. Stay away from the obvious game. Go for defense. Quarterbacks don't matter as much as if you can run the ball. It's really like old school rules. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know what to tell you.
You try to believe in a team that's on a roll, and like, and looking forward to next year and years after. Like, how much of a roll do we have to be on next year to advance further than we did this year? You know, like maybe the Eagles were just that bad, and we just killed these teams, the Eagles and the Redskins, and had a hot start. But I got to hand it to Favre. I don't like the guy. I'm not going to root for the guy, but he throws downfield. Big plays are nice. Like, the Cowboys had 2 nice, longish drives in the beginning and with no points. I think they had like 106 yards and no points out of it in the first quarter. And then, like, Favre just throws a bomb, and that's it. They're up, and they're going to win the game from there.
Could feel it coming because you crossed the 35-yard line like 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
And they, I don't think, crossed midfield, and then all of a sudden they had 7 points.
Yeah.
And It was definitely one of those snowball games, though. Like, I'd be interested to see what would happen if that game was played 10 times. Because, you know, the Rice TD, coupled with the fact that the Cowboys just came out of all those possessions with nothing. And it just kind of snowballed. The defense gets into it, crowds into it. And I don't know. It just kind of fell apart. But I think if, let's say they pooch punt on the 31, and that now the Vikings have the ball on their 8. You know, maybe it's a different game. I don't know. But whereas I felt like the Jets would beat the Chargers again.
Right.
You feel that? You agree with that?
I do. I think the Jets are, we've seen this before with teams. And it's like you don't know what, are they destined or are they totally full of crap? Like, is the playoff formula to beat two second string teams and then rely on 5 missed field goals? And then, you're in a conference championship game. Like, it seems to work. But the thing with the Jets is, like, I think the name of the game is not getting beat so bad that Sanchez has to drop back on all 3 downs. And that's what they've done. Second half, they're down only 7-0, and they could stay with their game plan. They could run
right.
The ball, play tough defense, and they're right there.
Well, the Cowboys' loss hurt you yesterday, but it also hurt me because we had a parlay with the Saints, the Colts, and threw the Chargers in, thinking if we won the first two, we could hedge against it somehow at the Jets game. The Jets line moved to 9. The table was set, but you were in Cowboys morning, so we made the decision to wait till halftime.
Right.
And then at halftime, after watching that game, and the Jets didn't have a first down really for the first quarter and a half, and then if Katie makes that field goal, it's 10-0, and you know, even though I was maybe a smidge worried about the Chargers collapsing or whatever, it just didn't seem like it made sense to hedge. What was the halftime line?
It was the Chargers were given 3 at half. So
yeah, so basically
a little bit of a cushion there. And I said to you, I was like, God, I'd really feel a lot better if we were up 10-0 right now.
I know.
Maybe. But
ultimately, it just seemed dumb because it didn't seem like the Jets were it was too much trouble for them to move the ball.
Yeah.
Stayed away, and of course, you know. And meanwhile, like the whole week, I thought the Jets had a chance to win that game. So the lesson here is that if you have a plan to hedge, just hedge before the game. Don't do the wait until halftime thing because that's like the dumbest thing you can do. So I'm so mad at myself.
That would have been a nice middle to root for towards the end, and we would have been relieved to just have the Jets have covered it.
You know what the move was? Because I really did think the Jets could win that game. Like, people thought, because I picked them in my column and I joked about the Simmons stink, like I did it as a reverse jinx. I really thought the Jets had a chance to win. And now I wish I had just taken the money I would have won in the parlay and just put all of it on the Jets money line. So either I broke even if the Chargers won or I won 3 times as much if the Jets won. I think that was the move. I should have done that.
Well, I think the Vikings killing the Cowboys led us against that. Like, we were like, oh, boy, wow, this is
it
things
did.
Are happening the way they should happen. The home teams are winning.
Yeah.
The week off has helped the bye teams, and everyone's just going to get annihilated. And that helped shy us away from it more.
Well, I still find it very hard to believe. I know Darrell Revis is fantastic, but there are multiple guys that the Chargers have. It's hard for me to believe they couldn't get one play between special teams. You know, Darren Sproles taking a screen pass 60 yards, Gates, whatever. They didn't have one big play, and they always had one big play.
Absolutely. The Chargers killed teams with that Sproles screen pass over all year long. And he should have run the ball too much. I don't get that. As soon as it was evident early that Tomlinson was not going to be a factor.
Evident early? It was evident 3 years ago.
Yeah, sure.
To me, that was the whole game for them. Was the fact that they just kept – it's almost like they're indebted to him. Like, it's weird. Like, this guy was done 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And he's just running into the line and falling down. And meanwhile, every Jets fan, I guarantee, was terrified of Darren Sproles just playing every down in that game.
Sure, of course.
Because then you can screen to him.
Worry about. Yeah.
Wait, what do you have to worry about Tomlinson? He can't catch the ball anymore, and he has no speed to the outside. Like, it's the greatest thing ever if he's in the game.
No.
So then at the end of the first half, they had Sproles in when they moved the ball downfield pretty quickly, and they ended up missing the field goal. But it seemed like they kind of found their rhythm on that drive, and that's why I ended up not hedging because I was like, oh, well, now they've figured it out. They're going to have Sproles second half. And no, they kept trying out Tomlinson. It was bizarre.
Well, I knew for sure we were losing, even though we still had the lead. I texted you. I said, I just saw a stat. Teams that benefit off an interception off the heel of a wide receiver that's hopeless on the ground are 37-0 in the playoffs. Could we ever come back from that?
Nah.
That you know, it's a play. It's just sick.
It's the distant cousin of when you have the road favorite giving like 11, and then the home team gets the punt block touchdown. It's over. Yeah. You just or the punt block return whatever. It's over when that happens. And this was I do agree with you. When you have the interception bounce off the guy's like shoelace and go right and whatever. I actually thought that was my, even though we lost, and I did find myself rooting for the Jets because it was such a good game, and they the whole underdog thing, I got caught up in it.
It is weird, but you look at Rex Ryan, it's like, God, this guy's a buffoon. He reminds you of like your Little League coach, you know, who's like tells off-color jokes, and your parents rolling your eyes, and just trying to get you through the season, and add you to his house for the barbecue, and just like, all right, okay, we can't really take you seriously, but we seem to be winning. But I don't know.
He does. I thought I love the 4th-and-1 call. Like, there's a case where you go for it. It's like we get this 1 yard, we win the game. If we lose, they're on the 3rd and they have a long way to go. You know, it made no sense to try the field goal. Punting, I think, would have been dumb at that point.
Right.
A little risky.
Now, you hated the onside kick there, right?
I hated the onside kick. I thought, I just think the move there is, you know, they have their hands team up. And we see this over and over again. So you fake the onside, you kick it downfield, you tackle the guy at like the 12 because he's got no blockers. And then, you know, I thought the crowd was pretty loud on the near the end zones.
Yeah, it was.
So, you know. So this was lost, and granted it was only 5 seconds, but can you call the timeout before the 2-minute warning?
North of the 2-minute warning, right. Yeah. That was stupid.
Why give away 5 seconds just to give him away?
That was dumb. That makes me think he doesn't know what he's doing, North Turner. But it really didn't bother me as much, the onside kick. I know.
Really?
I don't know why. You know why? Because I was like, it should be more than that. You could just have the ball with a minute left. Like, what would they have had? The minute left? From the third, their own 30, probably, if the Jets had punted.
Well, but the Jets punter is not that good, though. So let's say you get him.
Leatherford pinned him, inside the 10 a couple times at once.
I thought he was kind of spotty. He had a couple of bad ones in the first half.
Well, who was spotty is Nate Kading. So, like, the Chargers really would have had to drive a lot on that. I don't know.
All right, but let's say they start out on the 15 and they don't get it, so they end up on, like, the 23 punting. And he punts it to, like, the 35, and Sproles brings it to the 42. And you have, I don't know, a minute 20 left. I mean, that's pretty good.
I didn't think they'd have it at the 42, but okay, yeah.
It's just like the way they've changed the sound.
I thought if they would have stopped the 4th-and-1 play, they would have been exactly where they would have been had they punted.
Yeah, but it's...
Had they regularly kicked off.
It's so much harder to stop that play when it's in the middle of the field versus if the team's, like, on their own 15, you know? And I also think they, you know, at 4th-and-1 on your own 20, you punt.
Yeah.
You can't go for it there, but...
No, of course. They definitely would have punted. But, you know, I wasn't so confident they were going to stop them running. You know, they needed to stop them the last drive, and Sean Green went for 65 up the middle. So I kind of thought...
Here's the X factor. They changed that onside kick rule this year where if you kick it out of bounds, the other team just gets the ball.
Right.
So it really has to be a perfect onside kick. And actually, it was about as good of a kick as you're going to get, but I still think it's like 1 in 4 odds to actually get it. Whereas you kick it deep, and you know they have to run. I just feel like they could have stopped them. It was whatever. The Jets deserve to win, and the Chargers choked.
Kickers. We're missing, like, there are more missed field goals now. Like, I think the Adam Vinatieri days where a kicker's a hero are over. And I don't understand it either because everyone seems to be playing in domes and in warm weather. But kickers just suck, and they ruin the game. Like, I know it's not a fresh perspective, but this is like, I mean, to go through like 17, 18 weeks of like concussions and bone breaking sacks and everything, for it to come down to this schmuck who goes out there and misses a 38 yard field goal, it's I don't know, it's like an Olympic skier whose ski binding breaks, so he loses gold. It's really just, it's sadder than anything.
Well, but
I don't know why I take it so personally.
Didn't you feel like kickers were getting better though? Like I felt like at least the elite kickers were kind of had become money. And yet this year, they've been the defining story of the playoffs, probably.
I thought the clutch kicks just weren't there. Maybe it was just because I'm a Cowboys fan, but I was talking about it with my friend Jamie, and it seems like the big kickers are the ones who come through on an upset, like Matt Bryant, the Tampa Bay defeats New Orleans. It's a big kick, or Janikowski gets them through the upright. But I don't like it at all. The Cowboys shouldn't even have a kicker on their roster. I don't get it at all.
But. Well, the fact that he missed that one when it was 17-7 obscured the fact that they should have punched it into the end zone there. Mm-hmm. You know, they settled for a field goal. They had a lot of momentum at that point, and they needed to score a touchdown on that drive, and the Jets stopped them.
Maybe that's the lesson. Like, these playoff games, more than any other, are about momentum, and that's what the coaches should figure out.
Well, I don't know what the Chargers do. I mean, I assume Tomlinson's done. He's got to be. I just think he's finished. You can't fire Norv. You got to bring him back. But at this point, it's like the Wade Phillips thing. Does anybody think those guys are going to win Super Bowls with their teams at this point?
I feel exactly. It's the same thing. It might be worse for Charger fans, actually. But yeah, I feel like we're stuck. Like we're not gonna get past this point with a guy like Wade Phillips. We'd have to be really lucky.
If you're Jerry Jones, what's wrong with just bringing in Cowher and just talking to him?
I guess they could. I suppose he looks like a bit of a liar if he brings him in. Like, he's been in. It shouldn't matter. Like, people are saying that. Like, well, he's been behind Phillips all along. But, you know, he fired Jimmy Johnson after two championships. Like, yeah, feel around. I don't mind that at all. The bottom line is Jason Garrett is red hot putting up a three against Minnesota.
I know. Troy Aikman was great in that game. He was talking. There's not a hotter coordinator than Jason Garrett who doesn't score a touchdown. And then the excuses he was making for Romo. It was like listening to his dad in the stands. Oh, Tony, it's like this guy had a bad game. Like, I know he was under siege the whole time, but he also had no confidence.
He had no chance. He made something out of some of those plays.
He had a bad game.
That's why.
He did not have a good game.
Not a chance back there. He didn't. It was crazy.
He didn't have a good game. Well, we could agree that Jason Garrett did not have a good game.
No. Well, I don't know.
Do you hate the Vikings because they ran it up on you? Like, will you not be rooting against them?
About that. I mean, the best thing to come out of that is that Brooking ran to the sideline, apparently, and yelled at...
Yeah, that was good. I saw it.
Yeah, so... But, I don't know. I mean, if we're playing our first string D, then let them run it up. The only thing I'll say is your quarterback is 65 years old, and I think we play the Vikings next year, and we have a fearsome pass rush, so we probably will remember it.
Yeah. All right, so this week's lines, our little contest is already over. I get to beat you with a sub at some point. Although now I feel so bad about you with the Cowboys. I might even...
Oh, stop it. No, that's what I need.
You need to be beaten. All right.
Yeah, well, you just do it this week, so get it over with. But, yeah, our contest is over. You won. And
well, let's do the lines anyway. Let's do it for pride.
Let's do it. Jets at Colts.
Jets at Colts. This one... I really feel strongly about, and I think I'm going to hit it dead on. Colts by 8.5.
All right. Well, I felt strongly about it, too, and I also said 8.5, and it's 7.5.
Oh, Jets money.
7.5.
Jets money.
What was it against the Ravens? It wasn't 7 against the Ravens. It was 6.5. So.
I like how this worked out. Now that if the Colts beat the Jets, now we can say... All right, well, they could have gone undefeated. They just, you know, they didn't. But now we know that they would have won that game. If they beat them convincingly, I think. If the Jets win, then we don't ever have to hear about it again.
Well, no, if the Jets win, we know for sure that you play your starters and don't do anyone a favor, right?
Well, didn't the Welker thing kind of eradicate that?
I don't know. But what are the Colts going to be thinking if the Jets upset them? Like, we let them in with Curtis Painter, you know? Really? But he figures it out, right, Manning, this game? They at least win this game, please?
Look, I was arguing with a Jets fan by email last night that I'm friends with. The Colts have not lost a game when they've played their starters. We got to stop pretending like everybody, you know, they, in my opinion, they should be prohibitive favorites.
Yeah.
I know the line has to be where it is, but you know, to beat this team is going to take a Herculean effort. It's not going into San Diego and beating North Turner and LaDainian Tomlinson. This is a real team that has a great quarterback that finds ways to win every week.
I agree. So, he's always in control. Like the Colts, they win by whatever score they want, you know.
Yeah, you're not going to get the drop passes over the middle. You're not going to get the three missed field goals. You're not going to get the stupid game plan that they wait to change too late. Like this, you're going to have to actually make four or five plays and beat this team.
Right. But, and look, you brought up Darrelle Revis before. Like, great player, but he's not a middle linebacker. He's not a strong safety. Like, just don't throw to his side. Find out where he is and don't throw to his side.
Well,
like,
did you read Peter Kingsley?
You wouldn't hear about him for like five games straight because no one would throw to his side. You know, like, just that's the way to do it, isn't it?
Well, that's what the Chargers did, I think. Because Peter King charted it, and he said they only threw to his side four times.
Yeah, I saw that. But
where were the other guys? That's why I thought, you know, I just didn't – I don't – those guys like Malcolm Floyd and all those guys they had, they sound
– Floyd and Gates and Sproles on the screen. They should have figured something out.
I mean, I'm not sure Floyd's good. I just think they're not like I'm trying to think. Like, it seems like the Colts, like that Collie and Garcon, they actually get open and make plays, and I'm not sold on those Chargers guys.
Well,
anyway.
I'm just saying, don't throw to Revis at all. We don't need him picking the ball off on his back again.
Well, that's going to be interesting, because if he takes Reggie Wayne the whole game, that's Manning's security blanket.
Yeah.
And I also, you know, the hidden thing about this season is Manning has thrown some picks. You know, he threw almost two in a row in that Baltimore game that neither of them were good throws. Yeah, one of them got called back, but he has been throwing the ball up for grabs a little bit more this season. Anyway, let's go to the other one.
All right, the other one is, I don't even acknowledge the NFC game, so I couldn't tell you. What is the other one? It's Vikings, right?
Vikings at Saints. I said, I actually think I nailed this one too, even though I didn't nail the last one. I said Saints by 3.5.
All right, I said 3, and it's 4.5.
Ooh, the Vegas zone, interesting.
Little too high, don't you?
That's a little high.
I mean, obviously we do. We both said 3 and 3.5.
I mean, the Vikes have really not beaten a good team on the road, and they have the Childress Favre combo. They're not running the ball that well.
Mm-hmm.
I like the Saints. I wish that line wasn't that high. I was hoping it would be 3.5.
I like the Saints a little too, but you know what? I also like, you're going to kill me, Colts, Vikings teaser, 10.5 and minus 1.5. Come on. And then Manning wins 17-16 and we jump off the Hollywood sign together. 10.5?
I'm trying to think. A Jets-Vikings Super Bowl, wouldn't that be the most fun scenario?
Oh, yeah, Favre against his old guy, yeah.
No, not even that part. The fan bases, that's an awesome Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's true.
You talk about long-suffering. I mean, you go into that Super Bowl knowing one of those two fan bases is going to win the Super Bowl. Like, it's kind of disorienting.
That would be pretty cool. It'll mean I've lost a lot of money if that happens. it was cool.
Colts-Vikings... probably what the NFL's rooted for.
CBS wants, right?
Yeah, but I think if the Saints got in there, that's not a bad thing either because they could play up the whole rebuild the franchise.
Here's the thing. These teams they're both good teams, the Vikings and Saints, and maybe great, but there's some fluky aspects to this. Like, which is flukier, the fact that the Saints scored a billion points against it was just the Cardinals' defense that bad, or is it that the Vikings – pass rush was so good yesterday, you know, when 2 weeks ago or whatever, they gave up 36 points to the Bears in a game they needed to win. So how do you figure it out? Like, what do you do?
Yeah, the only thing I would say that was a little bit different about the Vikes yesterday was that they seem healthier to me, especially, you know, one of the Williamses had been hurt the last half of the season. And,
mm-hmm.
and man, their front four just, it reminded me of that Green Bay Monday night game.
Yeah,
and I don't know if down the stretch that their front four was healthy like that. So the thing that did surprise me though was that, you know, I just didn't think they're the third string middle linebacker. I thought that was really going to come back to haunt them, and it just not only did it not come back to haunt them, we didn't even hear his name because
didn't matter.
Yeah, it didn't matter. Anyway, all right, a somber Cousin Sal. We never like hearing
a
somber.
I'll be better next week. I promise.
It could be worse. You could be Conan O'Brien.
Yeah, that's true.
We'll talk to you before the Super Bowl.
All right, great.
All right, bye-bye. All right, let's go to our X and O's guy from the National Football Post. Our favorite, Mike Lombardi. What's happening?
Not much, Bill. How are you?
Have you recovered from Christina Hendricks jiggling her way out to the stage at the Golden Globes last night, or no?
No, I haven't. I'm completely spellbound. I was about 2 miles from where it actually happened, and I wondered how I could crawl over there. I didn't understand it. Amazing.
It is. It's something else. I would put her along with the Grand Canyon and the Niagara Falls as America's.
It's amazing.
America's natural tourist attractions.
I will say her dress designer had the right idea. That I will agree with.
It's pretty good. It was quite a ceremony. It's funny to me, like, so I was watching with my wife, and, you know, Greg Gardens wins. And she watched Greg Gardens. She thought it was horrible. And so it got nominated. She's like, how could that get nominated? That was horrible. And then it won. And then Drew Barrymore won later. Which she thought it was amazing. Drew Barrymore got nominated. I was like, no, Drew Barrymore will win. Watch. And what she didn't realize is that what happens is people pay the Golden Globes to, you know, like HBO just, it's like mafia. Here's a big suitcase of cash. So that's how Drew Barrymore wins an acting award. Because I never thought we were ever going to live in a world where Drew Barrymore would have an acting award. But it's a ridiculous event. But for some reason, I love it. I watch it every year. I think it's because they drink.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it looks like you're part of the crowd. I'm surprised you're not there. I really am.
I want to go. One of these years I want to go.
You should be there for write a column like a diary from the Golden Globes.
From George Clooney's table?
Exactly, you know?
The best part was Avatar winning. It's like they knew it had made so much money they felt obligated to do it. But come on.
Yeah. I mean, you could sit there at Clooney's table and just like, I can't believe she's having her 12th martini or something. I mean,
well, they had, I think like a week in... 2 weeks ago, there was some award where Mariah Carey was blitzed. It was the Palm Springs, whatever. It's one of those type things that she went up, and it's on YouTube, and she's just a mess. It's fantastic. So every year, everyone roots for that to happen at the Golden Globes, and this year it didn't. Let's talk about football. I mean, pretty much what we expected, except for Minnesota dominating Dallas.
Yeah, the Sunday games are kind of the surprise. I mean, we thought three home teams would win, which they did. I thought it would be the reverse on Sunday. I thought the road team would win, but Dallas, obviously the crowd noise, the defensive line of Minnesota was the defensive line that dominated the game, and Favre made, you know, great throws when he had to make them. And all this talk about how Adrian Peterson was going to have to control the game was essentially just what it was, talk. He got, 23 carries for 67 yards? He really wasn't the impact. The impact was Favre throwing it up the field.
At what point does this Favre thing become fishy?
Well, I think, you know, dome teams, you know, there's a dome theory that goes around, and I think it affects field goal kickers, I think it affects coaches' decision, and I think it affects offenses that play at home. And I think when it goes down to when he has to play in the dome and the crowd noise is not in his favor, I think you're going to see a different story in terms of being able to handle the speed of the game, the pressure of the game, in terms of making all the great throws that he has to make. It'll be a much different challenge when the crowd noise isn't in his favor. I always wanted to be a general manager of a dome team because I thought it was such a unique advantage.
And would you say that maybe Dallas's offensive line, which was borderline, a little heavy, a little slow, in a dome, that's a disadvantage for them?
Yeah, you know, and even in Lambeau Field, it was a disadvantage for them. And you know, it's always tough. The number one thing the offense has in its favor is the snap count. And when you play in a dome, you lose that. And if you're not going to do – I thought Jason Garrett made a couple tactical mistakes. I think he should have clearly moved the pocket early in the game. If the defense knows you're going to set up behind the quarterback all the time, there's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
You know, they're just going to tee off and go that direction. But if you move them in sprints and do some movement with them, I think you got to give them a chance. And I'm not sure they did. I think they just thought because ultimately when you were watching the first half of the game, they were moving the ball.
Yeah.
But oftentimes when they're moving the ball, Marion Barber runs for four and you say, damn, if Felix Jones would have had that ball, it would have been 40.
If those teams played 10 times, how many games did the Vikings win?
I think if they play in Dallas 10 times, Dallas probably wins 8. The Vikings could sneak 2. If they play in Minnesota, I think it's 8-2 Minnesota. I think the home field really made a difference.
I'm going to say 7-3 or 6-4. I still feel like if and we were texting about this yesterday, if Dallas just says from the get-go, you know what, this is a field position game, and they don't go for it on that third, they don't go for the 48-yard field goal, they do the pooch punt, or they go for it, or whatever, and they just turn it into a, this could be a low-scoring game, and you're going to have to make a couple plays to beat us. I think maybe it goes differently.
Yeah, I think the fallacy of the dome cost Wade, you know, he thought, well, it's 48-yarder, but we're in a dome. It's an easy field goal to make. He made him in pregame. And yeah. I think had that game been played outside where there's a wind, he might think twice about trying a 48-yarder. And I think you have to take almost the attitude that even though it's probably an easy field, field position in domes are even more critical because obviously the range of the kicker. So you have to be, you know, that's 7 yards. That's a turnover. I mean, the Cowboys, they committed, they really, with the two missed field goals, the fumble and the interception. I mean, there's 4 turnovers they just give away.
Yeah, they didn't play well. I mean, Minnesota certainly deserved to win. But I did feel like, you know, you forget, as you said in the first quarter, they were moving the ball, and maybe a couple plays go differently, and that game goes differently. On the other hand, I feel like the Jets would beat the Chargers in San Diego like 6 or 7 times out of 10. What do you think?
Yeah, I kind of, you know, the thing that was surprising about that game to me wasn't that I thought North Turner would protect really well, and he did. They really did. I mean, Phillip Rivers had a good opportunity, but they covered better than I expected them to cover. And, I mean, I knew Revis was going to be able to cover, but I thought the whole range of their secondary took away the big play. And the number one big play in the National Football League, the San Diego Chargers, didn't make a big play.
Yep.
And then the other thing they did, I thought they did, which they didn't talk about enough on the air, is they took away their screen game. And when the Chargers can't get their screen game going, we know they have no running game. I mean, look, let's face it. LT's career is coming to a screeching halt. I mean, you know, actually.
Coming 2 years ago.
Yeah, and I think that more they try to integrate him into the offense early in the game, 9 carries in the first half, really they got away from what the Chargers do. But the reality is that they didn't make any big plays, and their screen game was stopped. And when you stop the Chargers' big plays in their screen game, you neutralize their offense. I didn't anticipate that happening.
But didn't you think that they were just going to play Sproles the whole game?
And I did.
Kind of like what I was. Sal and I were just talking about this. At the end of the first half, when they had to move quick and they drove down, but Kading ended up missing the long one, and they had Sproles in every play, and they're throwing, and he's coming around, and they looked like the Chargers. That was the team I expected to see. And so then I thought, oh, second half, that's what they'll do. No, went right back to LT running into the line, falling down.
Catering to LT, and I think that was ultimately the downfall of the game. If the Chargers go back to, you know, 17 points to the Jets, you know, I mean, obviously they hit a couple runs, but to me, they got away from who they were. They weren't LT's team for those 11 wins, and on Sunday they became LT's team and it lost. And look, LT's had a great career, but all backs, when they hit that wall, and you know, the other thing that really became a problem, LT kept telling everybody, I had the best week, I never felt healthier, this is the best I felt going into playoffs. That's the kiss of death, because all of a sudden he started getting the ball and he couldn't do anything with it.
Why were they so afraid of him, the Chargers? Why not just say, hey, look, LT, you don't have it anymore. You know, we really use you as a short down back, I mean, a short yardage back, but we can't win this Super Bowl unless we use Sproles.
Yeah, I think that's the hardest thing in sports is to be able to stand in front of the guy and basically move on. And I mean, look at his pouting at the end of the game. I mean, you know, you saw him flashed over the side. Was he pouting because he didn't do anything, or was he pouting because his team lost? I'm not sure. And look, he's been a great player, but the reality of the league is that team's better when Sproles is running his screens and they're doing all sorts of things. They were more explosive. He slowed them down. His longest run was the first play of the game for 5 yards.
Yeah, but you know what? I think his legacy is going to end up being best fantasy running back of the decade. And then, you know, year after year, him sitting on the bench in the playoffs with that weird look on his face.
Yeah. I mean,
that team never made a Super Bowl with him. You know?
But, you know, and that's the thing, you know, and I mean, we're going to hear this for the next week. Adrian Peterson's going to have to take over the game in New Orleans or the back. You know, I mean, the Jets are an anomaly. I mean, their defense keeps them in the game and they can keep running the football. And maybe they are like the Ravens of 2000. I never thought they were that good on defense, but they're certainly playing to that level. But it still comes down to you got to make plays in a passing game. And when the Chargers don't make big plays or run their screens, they have no running game. So where do they go next? And I think that's really what hurt them.
I don't think any of us expected the Thomas Jones-Sean Green combo to maybe be the best 1-2 combo in the league right now.
Yeah, well, it would have never happened had Leon Washington not gotten hurt.
Right.
You know, I mean, Leon Washington's a dynamic player, and certainly it would have been Sean Green and Leon Washington, but they didn't have room for him. I mean, he only had 44 carries up until the end of November. And one of those games, he had 100 yards when Thomas Jones got hurt. I think the Raider game, he had a very good game. But other than that, he didn't do much until they finally decided that, you know, Leon's hurt. We're going to have to go with this two-power backfield. And, you know, it made all the difference. I know Jet fans say, hey, we're at the conference championship game without Leon Washington and without Chris Jenkins. Chris Jenkins, huge factor. I love Leon Washington, but, you know, Sean Green is adequately filled in for Leon Washington, so you're not missing anything.
I love Sean Green. And
great.
And I wrote about this last week. It infuriates me that the Patriots passed on him three times. How does this guy last to the first pick of the third round? Because after I wrote about him last week, how upset it made me as a Pats fan to watch him, I got some emails from, where do you go, Iowa?
Uh-huh.
Iowa fans who were like, dude, we knew this was going to happen when he got to the NFL. He was the most beloved guy we've had here. There was no doubt this guy was going to be a big-time player. Everybody who watched him knew that. And how does a guy like that go to the third round?
You know, it's hard. I know the Colts, and I talked to Bill Polian, and he was really close, Donald Brown or Sean Green in the first round. I mean, they really went down to the end on the decision, and they just felt Donald Brown was the better fit for their offense. But they really loved Sean Green. I don't know. The guy gained 100 yards every time he stepped on the field last year for Iowa. He's got the lower body you want in the back. He's deceptively fast. How does Ray Rice go to the top of the second? I mean, that's why it's so...
And Mojo. Ridiculous. I mean, every year there's a guy like this who produces huge numbers in college. Well, did Steve Slayton put up huge numbers?
Well, I mean, people didn't think he was going to be able to be a full-time running back. And I think ultimately, you know, if you don't understand the pro running game and you don't understand what your team needs in the pro running game, you let backs slip away. And I thought the Jets, I said it when they did it. You know, they had a great draft.
Yeah.
Sanchez and Sean Green, because that gave them two big-time players. You know, forget all those other picks. They got two blue-chip players.
And I remember last year, so it was the first two rounds, then the next day started with the third round, right, on a Sunday?
Mm-hmm.
And the Jets, if I remember correctly, traded up?
Unloaded their whole draft to get him, yeah. Yeah, it really did. And it was a smart play because, you know, but it took them till the end of November to figure out what their team was, you know. And I think the ups and downs, I think the worst thing that happened to the Jets was the early success that Mark Sanchez had kind of lured him into thinking he could really grow as a quarterback as the year went along. And he will grow, but in 1 year it was more difficult. So when they scaled back their offense, they became more dynamic and played to the strength of their defense.
And I do feel like he's getting better.
He is. I mean,
like
he's
throwing nice frozen ropes that are on target. Even a couple of the plays that got tipped at the last second were throws that were good throws.
He's adaptive to what he's doing, and repetition of doing the same thing over and over again has made it more comfortable for him. And the speed of this weekend's game against the Colts defense, which is exceedingly fast, is going to be a problem for him. But, you know, they don't mind punting. And they don't mind no yard because they feel like they're going to eventually get yards as they go forward. And I think the other thing I thought was really good was with Rex Ryan deferring the ball in the first half. Most teams against an explosive offense, they want to get the ball to start the game. But when you get the ball to start the game, the crowd's into it. You're going to go three and out in a hurry because the crowd hears you. It's very difficult. So the best thing you can do is why not let them on the field? Maybe you get a stop. Let the crowd settle down because if you start the second half with the football, most people are getting hot dogs. Most people are getting beers. The crowd noise is not a factor. And then you can move the ball. And that's when the Jets got their field goal and they really got more confidence that they could win the game.
You stole my thunder because I was going to ask you about that. That was my single favorite coaching decision in the playoffs. And as soon as he did it, I wrote it down in my little notebook. Great move. I love this because let's say you go three and out. Now San Diego has the ball in their 30, but then they're also getting the ball to start the second half. The odds of the Jets start, you knew the Jets offense was going to start out slow.
Right.
So, yeah. All right, we're going to kick it off to you. Hopefully we'll stop you, maybe get a little momentum. And we know if our offense is getting better and better, second half, we have the ball. And, you know, the other thing they mentioned during the game, and they didn't really show it that much, but it did seem like the field was starting to go as the game went along, which helps the Jets, obviously.
Yeah, when they lay that new turf down there, it becomes too slippery and it's too much. You can't get the right cleats for it. It's a real problem, and I think it really affected both teams, but specifically like a Sproles. A couple times I thought he was going to make a run down the sidelines and it didn't work. You know, he kind of slipped and fell down.
I thought it was a marvelously coached game by Rex Ryan.
I think
really,
all
I liked everything he did.
Yeah, I did too. I thought he was very good. I thought he was patient. You know, he didn't let the game get away from him. And ultimately, if you're going to have success against Peyton Manning, you can't celebrate in the first quarter. You can't get excited about it. You got to just keep playing the game, play after play, because at the end of the day, you know, that's when you celebrate, not during the game. And I think that's the approach he took against the Chargers.
Do you think the Jets, the New York Jets, the J-E-T-S, Jets, can actually go into whatever the Hoosier Dome is called now and beat the Indianapolis Colts.
You know, I don't like one-dimensional teams because I keep saying the Jets are one-dimensional, and they are. But the reality of it is the way they're playing defense and the way they're handling the adversities of playing on the road is I think I give them a great chance. Now, the speed of the Colts defense is the missing misnomer here. You know, they gave up 12 first downs to the Baltimore Ravens. I think the Baltimore Ravens and the Jets run the ball equally as well as they have all season. So they stopped the Baltimore running game, and they made Joe Flacco, which I didn't understand. I thought that game was poorly called by Cam Cameron in this sense.
Agreed.
You have a running game and you're running it on first down. Before the game got out of hand, there was a 20-3 difference in the score. That's when the game got out of hand. Cam Cameron called, they had 13 first and 10s in the game. Cameron called 11 runs on first down. That's not playing to your strength. Play to your strength is throw the ball on first down, get those easy yards, and then come back and run. And I thought he played into their strength. And then I think ultimately at the end of the game, at the end of the half, unlike Rex Ryan, at the end of the half, throwing those two incomplete passes, gave Peyton Manning the ball, that's where they lost the game.
Did we learn anything about New Orleans last week? Because that Arizona defense was a sham. Like, it's hard to believe that team made the second round.
I've never been a Reggie Bush fan because of his lack of real determined effort to run the football and his toughness to run over people as opposed to being, you know, trying to go around. And he's been so much of just a play player as opposed to running your offense. But I thought last week was the best he's ever played in his career in the NFL.
Agree. I actually did not know that he could knock people over.
I didn't know it either. I mean, he has the body to do it, but, you know, I never have seen him do it to that level. And I think that makes them even more explosive because now all of a sudden he's a factor because you got to really guard against him making that run. When he went north and south on the long touchdown run, I've never seen him do that. Usually he likes more dancing than that.
You know, I was thinking about this because it was such a dramatic character change for him for how he played. And I do think when you're a kick returner and you've always been a kick returner, you're kind of trained to kind of dance around and make people miss. But if guys are hitting you, you're trained to kind of protect the ball and fall down. You're not trained to, oh, I'm going to knock this guy go over. I'm going to knock that guy over.
Right.
And it almost seemed like a change in mentality to him. Like, oh, wait, I can do this too. I'd never seen him play like that before.
No, and that toughness he displayed, as a defense coordinator playing against him, you're always saying, hey, it's going to be a screen draw. He's not going to take it up. He's going to, you know, don't worry about him running over. He's going to try to sidestep you. And he took away all scouting reports on him, and that makes him a very different and difficult player now.
Do you think that – I can't remember if you're the one who mentioned it or somebody else. Maybe you did in a text to me. That, you know, maybe they cut him loose at the end of the year if he didn't show something in the playoffs. He's playing for a contract, basically.
Oh, I think he was playing for his contract. He's got a huge bonus coming out at the end of the year and next offseason. And I think, you know, it was going to be – he was an accessory to their offense. He really
yes.
wasn't what made them go. And yesterday he became part of their offense, and he took a huge leap forward to where all of a sudden now they can run their whole thing. And I compare Drew Brees to Steve Nash as the assist guy because he's really got five guys. When you have Shockey on the field, the three receivers, and you have Bush in the backfield, he can go out and put five guys on the field. And by Bush being able to run the ball inside a little bit like he did, now the defense coordinator has to be able, do I go to complete nickel? Do I go to dime? What do I do? If I go to nickel, they're going to run it. It's a tough matchup. And that's where the Saints really create problems for you is win their matchups by the talent level of their personnel.
It's hard to believe that Sean Green and Reggie Bush are going to be the two keys to the conference title games.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah. Can the Saints protect against the front four of Minnesota?
Yeah, I think they can. I think the Saints will move the pocket, and I think the one thing about Drew Brees is he's really good at finding alleys to throw the ball through, and I think he ultimately can do that, and I think he'll be able to find ways to get it vertically up the field because they do more. They set Drew Brees up more than just behind the center. He'll be behind each tackle. They run more boots. They run more cross boots. So there's a lot of different effect to their offense and a lot. And it's a much difficult offense to handle because of their formations and because of their personnel groups.
If Minnesota is going to win this game, what needs to happen?
If Minnesota wins a game, they're going to have to dominate the defensive front and they're going to have to put pressure on Brees like they did to Tony Romo, and that's the way they win the game. And they're going to have to be able to make a play in the kicking game, and they're just going to have to be able to throw the ball up the field and make big plays against the Saints defense, which has been known to give up big plays like the first play of the game. So I think they're, you know, keeping the ball away from the Saints isn't going to work. You know, you're going to have to be able to score with them and keep pace with them and then make plays down the field when you have the opportunity.
Coaching matchup goes to the Saints, obviously.
I think he's one of the best play callers in the league. You know, his creativity, his the way, you know, he crosses the 50, boom, he runs the throwback pass, you know, the dive throw back to the quarterback. I mean, he's got such a unique handle of the game. And Breeze and him are in symmetry in the sense that it's almost like he's playing quarterback, not Breeze. And so I think that really serves well, and especially playing at home. I think the crowd noise is very, very difficult to hear. What game is the first game next Sunday?
Oh, good question. Joe Mead, can you look that up? I'm going to make a guess. I'm going to guess that they start with Indy and the Jets, and then New Orleans, Minnesota would be the late game. Would be my
because
prediction.
It, you know, because again, this weekend it's typically 50-50. One team goes in, but I'm not sure we've had two domed crowds in a conference championship game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's ever happened. So
I don't think I remember looking this up. I don't think that's happened either.
Yeah, I think that's and it favors the Jets a little bit here because I really believe Mark Sanchez in perfect conditions can make every throw. I think he's a California type quarterback. Had this game been played in the Meadowlands with wind and all that, I would easily think that the Colts would have a distinctive advantage. But because he's very good in domes and he can handle that, I think he gets the advantage here.
Indy and the Jets is at 3, and the Minnesota New Orleans is at 6:40.
Yeah, that makes sense because the Minnesota New Orleans game is a gigantic TV audience potentially.
Yeah.
And
yeah, so, you know, I think the 50-50 theory almost gets thrown out the window because of the domes.
So you think both road teams have a legitimate chance to win these games?
Oh, I think both road teams are resilient. I think they, you know, the Vikings are a talented team in terms of their personnel groups. And Favre plays like he did against the Cowboys. Look, beating the Cowboys is no easy. The way the Cowboys were playing was no easy challenge. And I think really it was a great, great victory for them to be able to do that. I don't know how else. I don't know what else to think. I mean, it takes a talented team to beat the Cowboys.
So you're telling me there's a possibility.
Could we see the Brett Favre reunion game?
Of Rex Ryan and Brad Childress at Media Day.
Oh my God, would that be great?
Holy mackerel.
How about the Brett Favre game? I mean, could you imagine this? If it's Brett Favre and you know, his former team and Brett Favre on his current team and it not be the Packers?
That would be amazing. I think, me personally, I would love to see New Orleans get in there just because of I just think that would be a great story. When you think like they almost lost their franchise and how fast they were able to put everything back together. But on the other hand, as I said to Sal, a Jets-Vikings Super Bowl would almost be like an apocalypse. You'd have that means one of those fan bases would win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and then of course you've got CBS has got to be rooting for the Colts Minnesota Super Bowl because you have the Manning Favre. I mean that would be unbelievable. I mean,
really, you don't think they'd rather? I think they'd rather have the Jets for the New York audience.
You know, I think they can't go wrong. Obviously, if that's the case, they can't go wrong. They're going to get an AFC team in the game. They got to be able to be happy with either one.
Yeah, I think this is – I don't think they can lose no matter how this comes out. The worst-case scenario for them was probably San Diego getting in because nobody really cares about them. So you don't think – you think North Turner comes back and you think Wade Phillips comes back?
Yeah, I think North comes back and with an extension. I think ultimately Wade comes back. I mean, no indications from Dallas that he wasn't going to come back. Whether he gets the extension or not, I've not heard that. So I think there's no question they both come back. And, you know, San Diego's going to have to get themselves a running back. I mean, you know, they've got a lot of tough decisions this offseason. If we go to an uncapped situation, then their decisions won't be as difficult. But, you know, but if we don't, they have a lot of free agents, one of them being Sean Merriman. Who did you even see him make a play yesterday?
I didn't know he played.
Yeah, he played yesterday. I mean, did not even make a – I mean, he wasn't a factor in the game at all. I thought the Rickshaw Ferguson played in a really good game, and not that he was matched up all the time on Merriman, but he played out really well, and I think the Jets' offensive line dominated. But the Chargers have a lot of tough decisions. Sproles, what do they do with him coming back next year? Obviously, the LT thing, that's not going to be a difficult decision to make because I think that's pretty clear for everybody to see. They're going to move on.
Last question, because I forgot to ask this earlier. Were you okay with the onside kick at the end of the Jets-Chargers game?
You know, I wasn't, because anytime you're only down by 3, field position is the most critical factor. So if they kick it deep, I would have lined up like I was kicking an onside kick and kicked it deep, only because I wanted them to play an onside kick. Then there would have been no return. Could have been a chance the ball squirts out. Maybe I get it, maybe I don't. But then you eliminate fourth down from the equation. They would never go for it backed up on fourth down. Plus, if the punter shanks the ball, I only need two or three plays to try a field goal. Not that Nate Keating was going to make any, but at least I got a chance to try one. I completely disagreed with it. I thought you kick it deep there. You got the two timeouts, 55 seconds to go. Say you have it at your own 40. You know, you need, you know, you saw what they did at the end of the half. You give yourself a chance. If you onside kick it and don't get it, you put yourself in a tough spot. Field position becomes much more difficult because what people fail to realize is the play clock is a numerical equation of how many plays you have left. So if you get the ball back with 55 seconds and you've got 80 yards to go, unless you make a huge play, which is almost hard, you don't have enough plays to get down the field.
Joe Mead.
That becomes
yes.
the problem.
You're feeling pretty good about my football acumen since I made a lot of those points with Sal.
You certainly did.
Sal and I talked about this, and you and I could not agree more. I think it's, especially now that they've changed the out-of-bounds rule, you know, you have a one chance to get the kick, so the odds are like, what, 20, 25% versus
yeah.
faking the onside, kicking it deep. The guy always gets tackled at the 12-yard line. Now you have them trapped on that side of the field. The crowd's going crazy. They have to punt on fourth down. To me, it's a no-brainer.
And don't forget this. They almost blocked the punt. Should have blocked the punt.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, had they done that and lined up and gone all out to try to block the punt, maybe they would, maybe they wouldn't, be fear of a personal foul getting rough in the. But the Jets would have been a little nervous about them coming after it. They would have held their blocks longer. Sproles could have gotten a better return. I think all those things would have played into the favor, and I think I would have clearly kicked the ball deep. But at the end of the day, Nate Keating misses field goals. I mean, look, the 58-yarder at the end of the half, I don't count that. But the other two were turnovers. I mean, you can't dismiss them.
Yeah, field goal kicker. Story of the playoffs, probably, right?
Are you going to the Super Bowl, or are you making an appearance in South Beach?
I'm debating. I want to see what the matchup is. The thought of seeing all the Colts jerseys really bumps me out. I got to be honest.
You have to take your Patriot hat and move it aside and cover it in the good interest of the game for all the other people that read you that aren't Patriot fans.
I can't tell you how much I'm rooting for the Jets.
I can't believe that.
I get an honorary seat on the Jets bandwagon this week. For them to go in and beat the Colts would make me so happy. And I like Jets fans. We were once kindred spirits in the 80s and 90s, the Jets and the Pats, of just a lot of sad memories and bad things. And so I wouldn't mind if they did well. To me, it's like all the stuff that happened with Belichick and Mangini, all that stuff's like behind us.
Do you think Mangini, here's the next question, do you think Mangini gets a game ball?
I didn't even think of that.
I say he does. I say the Jets should send him a game ball, thanking him for the opportunity to draft Mark Sanchez and get rid of all those players that they had no use for. And then, of course, the opportunity to get Braylon Edwards, a legitimate receiver, who really, you know, people may argue when the ball hits him in his face mask, he can't catch. But if you're competing against Braylon Edwards, you got to cover him, and you're worried about him beating you vertically. So that takes a guy out of the box to help their running game. So I'm really convinced that I think, you know, it might be a good idea. Maybe Mangini could do the coin flip.
I would enjoy that, just to see what he wore. Super Bowl odds, Indianapolis is plus 120, Saints are plus 200. The Jets, plus 400, and the Vikings, plus 450. The Jets have better odds than the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, you know, the Jets are, look, they haven't given up, they don't give up very many points. Their defense is unique, and I think that the one advantage that the Jets do have, at least for a half, they've seen how fast that Indianapolis defense is when they play them there. So they have an indication of what it's going to take, and I'm sure they'll use that first half to their advantage. The coaching staff of the Jets did a fabulous job.
Mike Lombardi, National Football Post, Inside the NFL. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
All right. That's it for part one of the Mega NFL Playoff Podcast. Stay tuned for part two with Aaron Schatz from FootballOutsiders.com, as well as Chad Millman, our Vegas insider. See you then.
Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.
You laughed, you cried, you turned up the sound repeatedly, and now it's all over. This concludes another installment of the BS Report. And with all the talk about sports, Bill Simmons neglected to mention this important just-breaking news. Subway is home to the famous $5 footlong, so celebrate your favorite Subway famous $5 footlong, like the classic BLT or the Big Bowl Black Forest ham and cheese. All stacked your way with the meats, cheeses, and fresh, crisp veggies you love.